UK Wine Show, show number 32, Wine and Spirit Education Trust with Ian Harris. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 32 for the 5th of January 2007, and Happy New Year! I hope you had a good new year and you enjoyed some great wine with friends and family. This week, to help you into your New Year's resolutions, we thought we'd talk about wine education. So, over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking to people involved in wine education. We start this week with the Chief Executive of Wine and Spirit Education Trust, Ian Harris. The Wine and Spirit Education Trust, or WSET as they're normally referred to, train the trade in wine tastings. Their courses are very, very thorough. In the interview, Ian talks about the WSET and how they've revamped their courses, and also who attends them, and some of the background to the WSET. You can find the show notes for Ian's interview at www.3050.co.uk. There's a podcast box on the left-hand side of the screen. If you click on that, you can follow it through to the show notes. While you're there, have a look around. We've got quite a few interesting articles. And don't forget that the UK Wine Show is sponsored by 3050, the wine tasting company. So you can have a look at some of the different tastings we run for people at home or for your work colleagues. Next, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thank you, Chris. The ice wine harvest in Canada could be the latest victim of the effects of global warming. The unseasonably mild weather across the country is threatening the vintage of this sweet dessert-style wine. Producers need sub-zero temperatures to enable the grapes to be harvested and pressed while frozen, which concentrates the acidity and sweetness. However, in December, when ice wine grapes are usually harvested, temperatures hovered above zero around Ontario and other parts of Canada, when ideally they needed to be -8 degrees Celsius. Only British Columbia had a cold enough spell to allow the wineries there to pick frozen grapes. For producers in the rest of the country, it's a waiting game, because if January doesn't bring icy temperatures, they won't be able to make any ice wine this year. Unfortunately, current forecasts don't look too promising. Meanwhile, a new wine closure that seals like a screw cap but pops like a cork has arrived in the UK. The Zork is making its debut in the UK on a bottle of wine from Australia's McLaren Vale. The Zork was developed 4 years ago in Adelaide to help solve the problem of cork taint and random oxidisation associated with natural corks. It has been in volume production for just over a year, and its biggest market so far is for wines destined for the United States. John Brooks, the company's technical director, says the closure is unique. It preserves a lot of the wine opening experience of a cork, and it also preserves your wine in the same sort of consistency that a screw cap does. The closure is made of three parts: a plastic cap that snaps over the mouth of the bottle, a plunger that creates a popping sound when extracted, and aluminium foil in between to provide the important oxygen barrier. The UK's first wine to use the seal is Darren Berg's Cadenzia, a blend of Grenache, Syrah and Mourvèdre, and is available through 3050. And finally, if your New Year's resolution is to get organised, there's a new wine gadget that enables you to record tasting notes on a mobile phone or pocket PC. Called the Tasting Buddy, it allows users to take electronic tasting notes that are later uploaded to a personal online database where they can be edited, sorted and shared with others. Aimed at wine professionals and enthusiasts, the software has been designed by brothers John and Paul Fitzpatrick of System Ouvert Solutions. They said they noticed that at tasting events, many people were scratching notes about the wines in the margins of the wine list, yet many of these wine lists ended up discarded on the floor. It occurred to them that there must be a way to use a small handset to capture tasting notes, and as a result, Tasting Buddy was born. The software is available in two operating modes. The freestyle mode is good for professionals, while the analytical mode, which prompts the user, is designed for enthusiasts. The service is subscription-based with an annual fee of £40 for consumers and £30 for members of the trade. That's it for this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Two articles caught my attention. The first is the problems associated with Canada's ice wine not being able to be made because it's too warm. There are all sorts of reports over the last 6 months of global warming affecting wine. I'm going to be putting together a page on global warming that will pull together all the interviews and news articles that we've had on global warming, as well as some of the background information on why people are getting so worried about global warming and its effects on the wine industry. The other interesting article I thought was the Zork finally arriving in the UK. If you haven't heard of it before, I suggest you go back to show number 32, where I talked with the inventor of the Zork, John Brooks. I tried a bottle of the new wine just recently, and it was pretty good. And we're going to start showing it at some of our wine tastings. Next up is the interview with Ian from the Wine Spirit Education Trust. I had a look at his biog. Apart from a solid history in the wine industry, it also notes that his hobbies include sport, active participation in golf, hockey, plus the occasional games of cricket and watching rugby. But he does indulge other passions, which include singing, as he's currently a member of a four-part harmony group. He's married with two daughters and two female cats. So he is one of the few people in the world who can genuinely say that his life consists of wine, woman and song. Let's have a listen to the interview. Hi, I'm here with Ian Harris, the Chief Executive of WSET. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to see you.
What we're going to do is just cover off a bit about WSET, where you come from and where you're going in the future. When did you join the WSET?
I joined in April 2002, so I've been here just over 4 years.
Okay, but they've been going for quite a while, haven't they?
Yep, WSET was founded in 1969 as the organisation to train people who worked in the British wine and spirit trade. So we've been going 37 years.
37, that's pretty good going. And are you a profit organisation or...?
No, we're an educational charity. So when we were set up in 1969, we were set up by four organisations who were concerned with the wine and spirit industry. So the Vintners Company and the Worshipful Company of Distillers, and also the Institute of Masters of Wine and the Wine and Spirit Association of Great Britain. And we were set up as an educational charity. So we're not for profit, but we still obviously need to make a surplus to continue investing in making sure that our qualifications are up to date and highly sought after.
Is it the trade that you mainly focus in on?
It is still, the majority of people who come on our course are still connected in some way with the trade. So they may be buyers, they may be people who work at the senior end of the trade, or they may be someone who just works as a shelf stacker or a barman in a pub. When we were set up, we were entirely trade. And then in 1991, our charter was changed so that consumers were allowed on our courses. And now somewhere between 20 and 25% of people who do our courses throughout the world are consumers as opposed to people who work in the trade.
In our wine tasting business, one of the pre-requirements before anybody to join us is to have done WSET courses. You've got a range of different courses. Do you want to just quickly touch on what they are?
Yeah, sure. At the lower level, we introduced a course in 2003, just after I joined, called the Foundation Certificate in Wine. And all our qualifications fit into the National Qualifications Framework and are accredited by the government's Qualifications and Curriculum Authority. So we launched the Foundation qualification back in 2003, and it's a one-day course. So it's 6 hours of study followed by a multiple-choice exam. So that's the lowest level. The next level up is the intermediate certificate, and that can be done in either 3 consecutive days or day release for 3 days, 1 day a week, or can be spread over 8 evening classes. Next one up from that is the advanced certificate, and that's at level 3 within the national framework. And then at the top there is diploma, and diploma takes up to 2 years. We recommend that people take 2 years over it. It's around 120 hours of classroom study, but we recommend that people spend at least treble that, so another 360 hours of home study, including going to tastings, etc. We've also introduced in the last 3 years a specific spirits qualification called the Professional Certificate in Spirits, which is at the same level as the intermediate certificate, but focuses 100% on spirits.
Okay, and at the top end of the wine education in the UK is the Master of Wines. Are they the people who set you up?
They were one of the founding fathers, yes, because the Master of Wine qualification, as you quite rightly point out, is a very, very serious, very senior qualification, and there are only 250 of them in the world. And they identified back in the 1960s that they needed to have a training program at the lower level to lead people up to Master of Wine. So we have a very close relationship with the Institute of Masters of Wine. We're not the same organization. They are a membership organization. We are an educational charity. But the diploma qualification, which is our top qualification, is a prerequisite for anyone going on to the Master of Wine study program.
And when you came in 4 years ago, you changed things around quite a bit. What was the main reason for changing the course around?
Well, when I joined in 2002, I'm the first chief executive who's come from within the wine and spirit industry to run the WSET. And my background is predominantly in, it started off in wines and then moved into the spirit side because I was marketing and commercial director for Seagram UK. Seagram were at that time the fourth biggest spirits company in the world. Seagram were then taken over by Diageo and Pernod Ricard. Mm-hmm. And I'd had a lot of contact with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust because I'd done their qualifications in the late 70s, early 80s. And I'd also been a lecturer on the subject of brandy from 1990 to 2001. So I had good contact with the WSET. And when I left Seagram, when we were taken over, the job of chief executive was up for grabs and I applied for it. I was very keen to get it for obvious reasons. And the reason why we made the changes were really based on the fact that a lot of people in the trade were questioning the relevance of WSET qualifications, questioning whether they were actually being kept up to date and were required by senior people in the industry. So I described it as the trust being in a downward spiral. So people were questioning the relevance. Therefore, fewer and fewer students were coming on the courses, and therefore there was less and less money to invest in making the courses more robust and more up to date. So my main aim when I joined the WSET in 2002 was just to stop this downward spiral and turn it into an upward spiral by investing in changing the qualifications to bring them up to date. And we had a major exercise, particularly on the diploma, where we completely revamped the syllabus. We revamped the assessment method because up till then, for the diploma, it was a once a year exam across the whole syllabus. And if you happened to have a cold that day or you missed your bus,
hay fever,
anything like that, and you couldn't taste, then you had to wait another year to do a closed book exam. So the major changes we made on the diploma were to introduce more coursework assignments as opposed to closed book exams, but also to enable both our school here in London, but also other centres throughout the world, to run the diploma more often than just once a year. So that was the big change. But we also rewrote the textbooks for the intermediate certificate and the advanced certificate and brought the syllabuses up to date. And then we introduced, firstly, the foundation certificate, secondly, the professional certificate in spirits, and then in the last year, we've introduced a qualification called the International Higher Certificate, which is a way for countries where English isn't the first language, where they can do the majority of the advanced certificate, but in their own language, as opposed to doing it in English.
Part of the revamp was to fit it within the UK government's qualifications structure, but you also run courses in the US.
We do, yeah. We've
how does it fit in with the UK versus US?
Well, but I mean, basically, our qualifications are all accredited by the government's qualifications and curriculum authority, and that's important for people who work in the UK trade, because when they get a WSET qualification, they know they're getting an accredited qualification which they can use towards other qualifications if they so wish. In America, and indeed in the other countries we're in, because we're in 35 different countries now, of which America's the biggest. Now, for them, the accreditation isn't quite so important, but what is important for the US as well as for other markets is that our qualifications are very strictly monitored, they're quality controlled, all the exams are set and marked under the strictest control guidelines, and therefore they know when they're getting a WSET qualification anywhere in the world that they're getting a qualification which is worth something. It's not just something you can buy off the shelf in the way that you can
buy a diploma off the internet.
Exactly. You, I've been offered a lot of money for a diploma, but I cannot be corrupted like that. You cannot buy a WSET qualification.
You said earlier before the interview that you trained about 17,000 people and about 25% of those were consumer, 20 to 25%.
They are, yeah. 17,000 people a year take a WSET qualification somewhere in the world, in 35 countries where we're in. And still just over half of those are in the UK. The other 40% are in international markets. And different international markets have a different skew. In America, for example, it's more like 40% of the people who take a WSET qualification who are consumers as opposed to trade. But globally, it's around 20 to 25% of people who take any of our qualifications, even right up to diploma level, who are consumers as opposed to people who work in the industry.
If people behind the counter serving the wine know more about wine, then they can upsell and help consumers get a better wine. Do you think that's part of the reason why Majestic, their average price point is a lot higher than the rest of the trade? You know, I think it's almost policy that their staff does WSET courses.
I think you're right. And Tim Howe, who's the managing director of Majestic, is a great fan of WSET qualifications. And you're quite right. Their policy is to put people through WSET qualifications very soon after they've recruited. And they do recruit at the graduate level. So Majestic do recruit students at the graduate level. So they already have a certain level of intelligence and also the ability to learn. And they have, at the moment, over 80 people on a WSET diploma course. And Tim Howe has gone on record as saying that it's the keystone of the Majestic business. And if you look at the statistics of the average price of a bottle of wine bought through Majestic versus the average price of a bottle of wine bought in other retailers, it is significantly higher. So, yes, we believe that it's because their staff are well educated, and Majestic themselves are very committed to putting people and continue to put people through WSET qualifications.
Excellent. One of the things that I've noticed that you guys do is you do quite a few consumer events. The one that caught my attention was this new event you've run called Wine Dating. Not quite educating the trade. What's going on there?
Well, it's rather caught the imagination. We run, it's one of our staff actually, it's her brainchild, Nicola Greaves, and Nicola runs the membership body called the Institute of Wines and Spirits, which is our membership body for diploma graduates. And Nicola came up with this idea, having run a similar event for her friends. It's based on the concept of speed dating. So you have 10 girls, 10 guys, and 10 different wines, and they have 5 minutes each, and the bell rings, and then they move around, they move on to the different wine and a different partner. It is educational because it's amazing the number of people who, having been on a wine dating evening, then come on one of our qualification courses or come on to one of our master classes and seminars. So yes, it's a bit of fun, but everything that we do from a consumer perspective, whether it's wine dating, whether it's other games that we run for individuals or for companies, everything is based around people leaving here with more wine knowledge than they had when they walked through the door a few hours earlier.
Sure. I always say the best way to learn about wine is to drink it and with friends and have some fun.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
what sort of wines are you drinking at home, Ian?
I've got a fairly eclectic palate, having been in the wine trade myself for 30-odd years. I still go back to my roots when it comes to particularly red wines. I lived in Bordeaux for a year, and that's where I first got interested in wine when I was a student. So I do have a real love of Bordeaux when I can afford it, particularly Saint-Emilion. But when it comes to white wines, I'm afraid I'm a real sucker for New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Get on you, mate. You drink a fair bit of New Zealand stuff. Have you ever tried any of the English wines?
I have, yeah. When I joined the trade in the late 70s, English wine was a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
Some wine merchants had a couple of English wines on. But I'm delighted that English wine has, in terms of quality, really raised its game in the last 5 years. And I think the way that companies like Nightimber have really taken the sparkling wine market by storm, I think it's fantastic for the country. We've got a perfectly good climate, we've got great soil, there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't produce classic grape varieties like Pinot Noir in the UK, and companies like Nightimber have done a great job. In terms of still wines, I was delighted to see the back of the Müller Thurgau grape varieties, which were predominant in the late 70s, early 80s. And I've tasted some lovely wines. I was privileged to be invited to attend the UK Vineyards Association awards dinner 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I tasted some lovely wines, particularly some wines from Chapel Down, which I enjoyed.
First English wine I ever had was at a WSET course, Camel Valley Bacchus, which was quite nice.
Yes, obviously, being based in the UK, we can't give English wines a huge amount of time on our courses, but we're very keen to make sure that people understand that England is no longer a joke when it comes to wine production. We produce some fantastic wines in England. There are some really good winemakers here. And obviously we're limited in terms of quantity, so we're never going to be able to compete on the world stage with the bigger producing countries. But I'm delighted to see that the quality has come rocketing up in terms of not just white wines and sparkling wines, but red wines as well, and a long may that continue.
Okay, and do you have a wine tip for us, Ian?
The one thing that annoys me intensely when I go into a restaurant or I go to people's houses is how you can waste a fantastic wine
on having second class glassware. You don't have to necessarily buy the most expensive glasses, but for God's sake, serve wine, whether it's red, white, young or old, in a decent sized glass, because it's only that way that you'll get to release all the aromas and you'll really get enjoyment. You can waste such good wine by serving it in stupid little small glasses.
Yeah. So
find the biggest glass you can find, don't fill it very full obviously, swish it round and you'll enjoy it 10 times more than if you serve it in a small glass.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Ian.
Thanks.
Excellent to start the year off with thinking about education. Next week, we're going to follow that theme by talking to Chris Foss from Plumpton College. Plumpton is the main training institute for all the English winemakers, so it's a good chance to find out about how people make wine in the UK. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griffe de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jatelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.